think I will give a last round for the honorable members to either restore some critical issues or questions so that the department can respond. After the department, that will be NERSA. And then after NERSA, we will break for lunch. That's it. Because before we close to your right, the issues of whole development and if not, then we can give one of us doubt. Are you fine?
My question is late.
After that?
Yeah, I think she
has it now. Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Tao. I think you look also to the gender issue.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, with the AG's report on the municipalities that are not able to provide delivery or services to the community, what can be done? Because they are not capable. Is there anything that can be done to help them to do that? And the other one is on the ESCOM, to electrify schools. I'm not really happy about the answer that we received to say the schools which are being electrified now, it's schools that are from the department, which the department has identified. Because I think before 2009, the agreement was that all schools should be electrified by a certain time. But now if we get directive from the Department of Education, I don't think it's going to help us. Because in those rural areas and schools where schools are, some of those schools are voting stations, and there are no electricity at those schools. So I think we have to sit down and look at it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Yes, indeed. Just to follow up on what the Honorable Member has raised. In addition to that, I think there is the other issue regarding the municipalities. Is there anything that can be done to synchronize this year and thing? I know it will keep on coming up with it, but it doesn't seem like anything is being done. Because I see this as an opportunity for some of these municipalities to use as an excuse to say, we get this money 3 months later or 3 months early, and when the department reports, there is this 3 month lag, and you sort of can't hold them accountable. So I think we need to look at what needs to be done here. This next question has to do with the staffing situation. When the split was done, the department raised an issue of capacity, saying that the staffing is clearly doesn't match the budget, so there could be issues there. And I said, I recall, that it is nice to say we will do much less with more, and that's very commendable. I just want to know, by monitoring, how is the situation looking now? Because soon you'll be reporting for your own year where you have been working as a separate department. The other question has to do with the question of nuclear. There are many issues, and I'm sure they will come as we look into IRP 2000. But I just need a little clarification here. For the last so many years, ESCOM has been busy with nuclear one, and they've been busy with the the environmental studies and so on. Now, IRP recommends six, a fleet of six power stations, 1,600 megawatt each and stuff like that, and that's fine. Does that mean that nuclear one is dead and that these other six will then be replaced, or is nuclear one still continuing and the other six will come on top of that? And finally, just a comment. I need comment from the department. It's tough to get money from the treasury. Very tough for all departments. So how do you guys feel when you have to give money back to the department because it wasn't spent? And are there mechanisms that you guys are putting in place so that all the money that comes into the department is adequately spent? Thank you.
Thank you. Just the integrated energy centers. I see there are two that are operating. Are they operating well? And the other thing is, what is the hold up with the others? Especially the one in the closet with the other Bundy. Maybe if we know with the system somehow.
Again, Chairperson, I will request the relevant managers to respond on my behalf. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to answer the one on the paraffin issue, and ask Mr. Marquet to deal with the hold up on the IEC. Just to indicate that we also are concerned about, you know, making energy services, particularly the more modern ones, available in rural communities. And we do have a plan for that. And it's a multifaceted plan. The first one, of course, the intervention that we believe we have for the rural development, which is unfolding as we speak, is the one of the IECs. Basically, the IECs were meant to intervene to take energy services closer, as much closer to communities as possible, and make available in those communities, you know, all forms of energy, from the most, you know, from paraffin, for example, to even going to an extent of dispensing, LPG and those kinds of other energy carriers. The second one, intervention that we are working on, and I think the DG and the minister will elaborate at an appropriate time, is a strategy on LPG intervention, because we've seen it succeed in particularly low income areas, in a number of areas. I mean, here, for example, in Langa, for example, Khayelitsha, the rollout of LPG is quite significant. Mitchell's Plain, the use of LPG is growing, and growing significantly. So it's something that we believe we could, there's something that we believe could be done around that, and moving people also to LPG, but then it would have to be an integrated approach, which talks to also local manufacturing, so that you can bring the prices of the stoves as well as the cylinders as low as possible. So that is the and then, of course, in as far as the price of paraffin, as Mr. Marquet has indicated, there is still a link to the fuel price. And you know, subsidies, you know, is something that we, you know, wouldn't necessarily want to go that route. Rather move people to LPG, which would then mean the use of paraffin over time. We phase it out of the of our community. So that is the approach. And then on the IEC is the status. I think Mr. Market can then give us a brief update.
And I think we I think in terms of the integrated energy center, the specific question around Ulum, the delays at the Ulum, the IEC, from our side, the intention is itself to finalize it in the next financial year. However, the delays that we experienced there was that the site that was allocated for the project was actually modified after the EIA was already conducted. So we had the consultant then to go again and recommission the EIA site. In terms of successes, I think it's really a mixed fortune, you know, if you look at it that way. Some ICs are operating very, very well, doing very well. If you look at the one in Limpopo in Mutal, it's actually for us the model IC. That's how IC should be like. In some areas, like in Northern Cape, in Mushawen, and so on, mainly because of the management of the site, the kind of people that you get to run the site, because it's owned by communities, you cannot bring people from outside to run them. Some of them are not doing very well. They're just making it. And also the support that we get from the local municipality, because the department from national office can assist them to facilitate. However, in terms of maintaining the project going forward, and so we rely mostly on local municipalities. So in some cases, the LED managers are tasked in monitoring this project. They're not necessarily doing their work and so on. So what we are doing going forward, we are reviewing the strategy to roll out the IEC program. To say, how can we link up particularly with the comprehensive rural development program to ensure that it is all the stakeholders involved in the IC so that it can also get the necessary support that is required. Thank you.
The questions around the electrification of schools are addressed. There are actually two aspects to schools electrification. The one is the actual connection itself, which the Department of Energy undertakes. But we have to be careful, Chair, about creating white elephants. And that's why we link it to the Department of Education programs. Not only because of the white elephant thing, but what happens is that we enter into an arrangement, we hand over to them in terms of which they undertake to maintain the school's connection over the life of the school. So if the Department of Education indicates that that school is going to be discontinued, we do not electrify. That's the relationship relationship. Maybe that is one of the reasons that you might recall the main undertaking that we electrify all the schools by the end of this year. And we are well on target, but it's on the basis of those that have already been identified by the Department of Education. And that's the basis. The question about what can be done to assist municipalities that do not deliver, if we can link that maybe with the synchronization of the financial year. Maybe starting with the financial year. I mean, the National Treasury is best positioned to elaborate on this, but the rationale is that you want to pronounce and indicate to the municipality a budget allocation well in advance in order for them to use the period of 3 months leading to the financial year, yet their end, or to the end of the new financial year, for them to do the planning. That is the rationale. So you don't announce the budget today and expect that municipalities will implement immediately. But also you must remember that in terms of the processes with municipalities, they undertake a particular process before they adopt their budget. These are experts in the school that can explain it better. But basically what happens is that after National has announced the grants, equitable shares, and all of that, and NERSA has even announced the carry for that particular year, the municipality goes through a public consultation process, amongst others, before they adopt their budget. So you have that lag for that particular reason in order to do that. But the chair, because of it, is also that because it's a clear indication, the MTEF is theoretically supposed to give them enough indication as to what is coming and whether it will start playing. That's in the field. But unfortunately, because of the nature of their funding, or rather because of the financial situation at most municipalities, they rely entirely on those grants. So nothing will happen until they have passed the budget because they don't have the money, and therefore, you know, we just put that into the financial year. But over and above, having said all of this, it's not really within our powers to fiddle with the fiscal structures and the international treasury issue. Notwithstanding, we indicated yesterday, I think, that we had started a program to second technical skills. There's about 100 over the past 3 or so years that have been allocated to the municipality to assist them with the planning and some of the technical aspects of it. So that's what we do. Over and above that, also realize that I think it's about 187 licensed municipalities that deal with the electrification program. The rest of the municipalities that are not licensed have the electrification program done for them by ESCOM, and we don't see the same kind of problems. So in some arrangement you could have an ESCOM kind of entity assisting and municipalities, but there are also political issues around you know, getting into that. In fact, that was one of the, if you like, biggest positives around aggregation into regional distributors, that you would be able to address something at the aggregate level rather than at each municipal level. Insofar as the UK one is concerned, that was part of the procurement process that ESCOM aborted about 2 years ago. The IRP one is announced now, what happens in the space. In fact, any new generation capacity that gets built follows a particular process. So, you know, the extent to which you may or may not be able to use that EIA process subject to the implementation of the, or the rollout of the nuclear power station program. So the idea is not to, I think the question was, does it mean that nuclear one is dead due to the IFP process? There is no nuclear one. And the question about how we deal with, or how we feel about money being given by teachers, I think the CFO is we feel very sore, but I think we also explain that, you know, to the extent that we can reallocate and try and do that, to the extent that we can environment, we do that, but also there are limitations as to, you know, how you can manage the amount of funds under the division of the that was an issue that was discussed on the PRR mission.
On nuclear one. Actually, I'm very surprised to hear this. Because if you go to St. Francis Bay, there are people up in arms because EIAs are being done, there are lobby groups, there's things about placement and stuff like that, which is nuclear one, really. So why has ESCOM been doing all this work if this project has been abandoned or shelved? But clearly, it raises the question whether it's still there or not there, because work is being done, as far as we know.
I'm looking at my bosses. But most seriously, the introduction of new generation capacity in the country follows a process which is prescribed under regulations and so forth. So there might well be, I think this is a legacy issue in relation to ESCOM having started a procurement process 2 years ago and then aborting it, and then some of the work that has been done. The particular EIAs that have been referred to are definitely from that previous attempt to introduce what is being referred to as this material. But the government has not yet made any decisions around the nuclear program.
Also, I'll pipe in to respond on that.
Thank you, Chairperson. In 2008, December 2008, Cabinet did made a decision on Nuclear One, and reason being it was way too expensive. The bid that came through came very, very expensive. So the idea there was not to abandon nuclear as a possible primary energy, but to abandon that project in particular because it was too expensive. So effectively, what had happened was that ESCOM had identified about four sites.
Five sites, yes.
For possible nuclear sites. So with the proposal that has been made in the current plan, it says we're still going to need nuclear sites. So hence, therefore, that's why the work has not been abandoned.
Chair, if I can just add to what Mr. Pan has said, but he said exactly what I wanted to say, that as much as we would really like to spend all this money, it is very true, Honorable Mutau, that the process of getting money from Treasury is very, very difficult. I think all the CFOs and the CEOs and the GD around the table can attest to that. But again, there need to be an issue of striking a balance. That, it has to be done within the applicable legislative framework. And on the other side, we need to still achieve the prudent the principles of prudence when we execute all these duties. And of course, lastly, the fact being that we really need to spend and give the South Africans the value that is worth the money that we have spent to them. And if the process sometimes takes a bit of a while to achieve that prudently, you would rather give the value later than to give the no value now. As a South African and not as a CFO, I think I can attest to the question of the IEC, the benchmark one. I think I drive past it when I go to my place in Venda. It's a really a good station. It's a one-stop shop. It has got almost, I think they've got ATMs for all the banks, all the big four banks now. They have got all the internet services. And all those things. It's really a very fully fledged service center where people get all the kind of services they want. Thank you.
I think we must now.
There's one question that hasn't been answered. For Mr. Mundao, relative capacity. That how are we doing as a department? Yes, we are asking. still committed to, you know, doing more with them. You remember that when we, you know, started with the Department of Energy, we had a staff complement of 325 posts that were funded against the total staff complement on the approved structure as compared therewith by the Minister of Public Safety and Administration of 925. But because of the realization that there was no funding, we identified the critical posts which were necessary for the establishment of the department. And that's all. In total, we came to 325. Then we received additional funding that was erroneously allocated to mineral resources to the tune of 30 million. And the total number of funded positions came to 531. And so far, we have in total filled 458. And the only vacant post at the moment that are in the process of being filled is only 73. Can I repeat? When we started, we had 325. Then we received the additional funding for 30 million, which was erroneously allocated to DMR. Then we, managed to fund 206 posts. We have filled 458, and we are now remaining with the vacant positions, 73 in number, and all these positions are in the process of being filled. But to have a full staff complement of the Department of Energy, we need 925 posts, and which means then that overall, 394 posts are not funded.
I think also to inform Honorable Tao, I think you must also say on the 73, we already have already do the advertisement of how many posts will be filled soon. Maybe you say to us, I think 2 days back.
Yes, I said all these 73 positions are in the process of being filled. You know, they are at various stages. Some have been advertised, and some, we are in the process of, selecting those candidates that can be shortlisted. And some have already indicated they are accepting offers, and, in some instances, we're still waiting for a response from those that have been nominated.
DJ, I hear the CFO was saying that some of your regional staff, I think, I don't know if it's administrators or support staff, they don't have the necessary skills of finance. I think this is a very critical issue, and it must be addressed soon. We talk about internal training, so I think that thing must be happening. Lastly, I want to say, before you step down as the department on your annual report, I was saying that well done for the preparation for the World Cup, that we don't have a problem with electricity and also with fuel, and I must congratulate the department on that. Sometimes they say it must not only be responsible, but also give people credit when it is necessary. So therefore, I want to thank you very much for that. I think it was for the benefit for South Africa that the department was doing that. And also, I'm not saying that it's the first year where you're on your own when you report. I think it can improve if we can fill the critical positions where we can really time the work supposed to do. And also, I think the one of the municipalities, I don't know what the department do it, but I know it's a local government function, but you work in partnership of local government, and I don't think that it's acceptable for the municipalities, because they have the IDP processes where they identify the necessary needs of the people, and therefore you're going to budget according to your IDP. for that roll out of the program. In some of the municipalities, they have already signed the MOU and be finalized. And I think these things must be. I don't know where, but these things are reported. But we have also other subcommittees where we can report or lobby with them, so that we can see can we not speed up the process. CMO, I hope and I trust we don't have rollovers. And now it is municipality who caused also that we have that rollover. And as I was saying, that we must try to help one another so that we really deliver the service to the people of South Africa. But I thank you very much for coming to you with your department. And I hope we see you soon. And I think so you can stay here. As the honourable member was saying last year, Khadebe, Nessa mustn't dance. So Nessa will be next when the guitar is playing. So I think you are welcome if you want to stay. Yeah, I think we're not really time. I think we'll give over to Nessa to give us the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable member. I'd like to introduce the team that will be doing the presentation. We've got our CEO, who is the accounting officer, but I also would like to introduce Mrs. Pomusom Chimunye, who is Chairperson of the Audit Committee, who's accompanying us today. We also have our CFO, Mrs. Busi Chaunda, and we have Ms. Nomalanga Sitone, who's the Executive Manager, Corporate Services, and Zethu McKenzie, who's the Senior Manager in the CEO's office, and Uzo Kofoma Kosha. Chairperson, I hand over to the CEO on that note.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Following hot on the heels of our mother leader, the Department of Energy, I'll be very brief, Chairperson. Recognizing the Chairperson of the Energy Regulator, recognizing the Chair of the Audit and Risk Subcommittee of NERSA, and also the honorable members, I'd like to start by indicating that the outline of the presentation will just give a brief profile of NERSA and try to demystify what NERSA is all about. Because as an active administrative body and a creature of statute, we can only do what is in the statute. So it's very important that our mandate as an institution is understood, because in many instances we are called upon by the public to do things that are not in the legislation. So, briefly, Chairperson, we are established in terms of the National Energy Regulator Act, and our mandate is contained in three pieces of legislation: the Electricity Regulation Act, the Petroleum Pipelines Act, and the Gas Act. Now, we do what the published government policy is saying, and we also do what the regulations that the minister promulgates from time to time. Of course, NERSA was established in 2005, and we began regulating pipe gas and petroleum pipelines in November, and we took over from the erstwhile National Electricity Regulator in July the following year. So simply put, Chair, If one were to ask, just in four areas, what is your mandate? Our mandate is, one, to issue licenses with conditions. Secondly, is to set approved prices and tariffs. Thirdly, is to monitor and enforce compliance to the license conditions. And thirdly, dispute resolution, including addressing issues of mediation, complaints, and so on. Simply put, one can reduce the main task of the regulator in those four areas. There are other areas that we act in terms of the legislation, but those ones are the very important ones. So in terms of the structure of the energy regulator, 9 members, 5 of them part-time, 4 full-time, and the chairperson and the deputy chair are part-time. And you've got 3 members primarily responsible for the 3 industry regulation, namely petroleum pipelines, pipe gas, and electricity, and of course the chief executive officer. Chair, as you are aware, the minister appointed the part-time members in 1st of January this year. The reason being that the law prescribes that part-time members' term of office is 4 years, and the term of office for full-time regulated members is 5 years. So we've got new part-time members that have been appointed from the 1st of January this year. We had 9 subcommittees until the 1st of December, and from there we're having 7, simply because that the policy subcommittee was done away with, and the regulator executive committee assumed the responsibility of that committee to deal with all cross-cutting regulatory functions. And the remuneration committee's functions were merged into the human resources subcommittee. So the subcommittees were then reduced from 9 to 7 at the beginning of the year. In terms of the structure of personnel, chair, we've got 6 divisions for the 3 industries: electricity, pipe gas, petroleum, and support functions, human resources, finance, administration, and corporate services. And specialized units in terms of strategic planning, regulator support, which gives support to the board and its subcommittees, internal audits, regulatory research and analysis, and of course the sales office. The total complement at the 168 is approved by the minister. Chair, we in terms of strategic objectives, without going into then we emphasize the issue of policy, the issue of legislation, the regulation, and the rules. What is important is to realize that the issues relating to legislation are a function of the legislature, the regulations are a function of the minister, and the rules we do as prescribed by the legislation. Chair, credibility, legitimacy, and sustainability in a transparent and an independent way is paramount to the functioning of any regulator, not only NERSA. So it's one of the objectives, and of course, to ensure that we have an effective organization and also make sure that we do evaluate and monitor our performance. In terms of the overall performance against predetermined objective, is that at the end of 2019 financial year, NERSA had a total of 314 activities in its business plan. 35 of these activities have been completed and 31 were on track. At the end of the financial year, a total of 66% of activities were carried out as planned. 15% of activities were delayed due to external dependencies that are outside of NERSA's control, and we'll elaborate on that at a later stage. The main reason for delays, those that are within NERSA's control, relate to reprioritization due to emphasis given to other activities such as the midterm application by ESCOM for price increase for 2008-09 and the application by ESCOM of the MYPD-2. And also licensing of existing facilities in the pipe gas and petroleum pipeline industries taking longer than anticipated. We are still going on and finalizing the licensing of existing facilities. We had thought that we would have done that within the first year of licensing. And of course, the human resource constraints was a factor of the delays. Now, Chair, taking each industry one by one, as I indicated, with electricity, there was an interim application. We all know that NERSA decided to grant of the 1.3% in June last year, and we have approved municipal tariff applications 125 years, Mr. Yampani, you are correct. We have 187 licensed distributors, 8 of whom are private, and the difference is municipalities. By and large, this number is increasing, and I think it's improving every year, because there are municipalities, for some reason or the other, in terms of capacity, don't submit applications for tariffs. And of course, Chairperson, we approved the second phase of the renewable energy feed-in tariff. We did approve the first set. And of course, on the 9th of December last year, the energy regulator approved the principles to be used in determining the tariff guideline increase of electricity distributors. And we also, in February this year, we approved the MYPD increase over the next 3 years for ESCOM, resulting in the 24.8% for this current financial year, 25.8% the next financial year, and 25.9% in the last MYPD period. And then in February, we also approved the municipal tariff guideline, as well as the electricity tariff level benchmark for the 3-year control period, equivalent to that of the MYPD 2. I think it's important just to pause a little bit here, Chair, that the municipal tariff guidelines are determined soon after we determine the average price of ESCOM, so that we give municipality the range which, within which they can work out their tariffs at municipal level. Still continuing with the electricity industry regulation, part of the approval of the MOIPD 2 was the inclining block tariff, the structure for implementation by both the municipal distributors and municipalities. And this is to ensure and to give effect to the electricity pricing policy, which calls for some form of a reasonable cross-subsidy to ensure that the low-income households' tariffs are cushioned in a particular way. And of course, we also approved the ESCOM schedule of retail tariffs. So what we are saying is that the process of approving tariffs is such that we first determine ESCOM's average price nationally. We then determine the guidelines and the benchmark for municipality. On the other hand, ESCOM goes out and do what we call a retail tariff structuring, so that because they don't charge the same tariffs, or they've got about a number of customers who can just be categorized into domestic high, domestic low, commercial, industrial low, industrial high. So they put various methods that they then come with the retail tariffs and submit to the energy regulator for approval. The energy regulator also produced consultation paper for the selection criteria for repeat projects. And of course, this particular project has since been held back due to consultation with the National Treasury and the Department of Energy. The Energy Regulator also approved the transfer of two distribution licenses on 25th March 2010. These transfers are normally in those areas where a municipality is becoming capacitated, then it takes over the distribution areas which were formerly held by ESCOM into the municipal area, like the mid-val area in Gauteng. Coming to the pipe gas industry, in terms of pricing and tariffs, the energy regulator approved the tariff guidelines for gas transmission and storage facilities for the pipe gas industry. And the energy regulator also approved the price capping mechanism for 2008 involving the European benchmark price, EBP, and Sasol volume weighted average gas price. explain briefly the regulatory agreement, the agreement that the SASCOT has reached with government is such that the pricing mechanism that has been used, you take a basket of European companies and then you look at their average price. As long as SASCOT's price that SASCOT charges to its various categories of customers does not exceed that, there's nothing much. We have to accept it as a regulator. In fact, for the past 4 years, we haven't experienced the way SASCOT has charged beyond that price. It's an agreement. It's contained in the agreement that SASCOT reached with the government, which of course is coming to an end in 2014. The energy regulator also approved the Romco tariff for the period from January 2007 to 2008. Romco, of course, is a company, joint venture, that owns the pipeline from the Timari gas field in Mozambique to Secunda plants of Sasol. Of course, the energy regulator also approved the sources of information to be used as input variables in tariff applications. At NERSA, we're trying to ensure that our sources of information is standardized. For instance, for inflation, we for the historical figures, we rely on StatistSA. For forecasting, would rely on BER. For a number of issues in terms of risk premiums and so on, we take a basket of banks and use that kind of information. This is the what is being referred to. In terms of licenses that have been granted, certain licenses were amended with respect to the Gas Act. We have also granted 14 construction licenses to Sasol. As you know, Chair, that Sasol is the main, if not the only actor in terms of the gas infrastructure in the country. The energy regulator also amended 8 licenses granted to Sasol due to some extension to the construction period that the licensee failed to meet. And the energy regulator also granted Transnet Pipelines, a trade of Transnet Pipelines for the operation of the Secunda to Devon South Gas Transmission Facility, commonly referred to as the Lili Pipeline. I think the history is important here. We know that in the past there used to be a petroleum pipeline that straddles from Devon via what used to be called Richards Bay through to Secunda. In the past few years, that pipeline was converted into a gas pipeline, transporting backwards gas from Secunda to South Devon region. So this is the Lili pipeline as it is called. The energy regulator also granted a license to trade in compressed natural gas, CNG, for the first time to Novo Energy Limited in 6 areas. The licenses that have not been granted is to Unigas and Unigas Import and Export for the construction of gas facilities in the Eastern Cape, Western Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal. The main reason for not granting this license, I think the applicants, in the view of the energy regulator, failed to demonstrate its financial capabilities. Yes, the technical and administrative capabilities were there, but insofar as the financial capabilities is required by the NERSA rules and the Act, the applicant was not successful. Secondly, the license was that was not granted to Gigajoule Africa 5 and for the construction of a gas transmission and distribution facilities and the Gigajoule Africa Gas for trading in gas in the Cape, in the Western Cape coastal region of the Western Cape. The main reasons for not granting this license is that the applicants do not have firm agreements with the gas suppliers. The applicant insisted on using pricing model that is not in compliance with the Act. Also, the applicant required exclusive training that cannot be granted by the energy regulator X. The numerous uncertainties regarding the details of the proposed facilities as well as guest specifications. The issue here, Chair, is that the applicant intended to bring a compressed natural gas to Saldanha Bay and then distribute that into the Western Cape. However, on examining the application, there were certain deficiencies. For instance, the firm commitment in terms of that supply of that compressed natural gas, and also the applicant wanted to have exclusive areas, the same condition that exists with Sasol, which we as a regulator, because we are enjoined to promote competition, we cannot give a one area to just one supplier. That means others cannot come in if they want to come in. Okay, moving to the Strugam pipeline. In terms of the petroleum pipeline, the energy regulator approved the Transnet tariff for 2009-10. Originally, the Transnet applied for an allowable revenue increase of 82.5%. However, during the publication, they reduced the allowable revenue to 74.4%, and the energy regulator granted a reduction of about 12% to Transnet pipelines. And of course, our methodology, tariff methodology, which was approved, was revised into fifth amendment. And then on December 4th, 2009, the energy regulator approved the maximum tariff that will apply to Transnet Talto storage facility. For most people, when you drive past Krugersdorp towards Magaliesberg, you will see some installation on your left-hand side. That's the Talton storage facility. In fact, that's the very end of our pipeline transportation of petroleum products. From there onwards to the west, it's all by rail or transport, particularly to Botswana. Just as a matter of interest. And then on the 25th of March this year, the energy regulator approved an allowable increase of 11.86%, allowable revenue increase, which translates into around 7% of a tariff increase to Transnet pipelines. We also approved the storage and loading facilities tariff methodology. So we've got two different methodologies for petroleum pipelines, for the pipelines and for the storage and loading facilities, which are normally located in Devon, for instance, the Island View and the Saldanha Bay and some other areas in the Western Cape, like Mossel Bay. The energy regulator also approved the Transnet certain regulatory asset base for its petroleum pipeline and the certain storage facility. Chair, it's very important to note that before we established the starting regulatory asset base of Sasol, we had to use, for Transnet, we had to use whatever they gave us. And when we look at the records, we could not establish the historical value of the asset. Therefore, we had to commission one of the firms to make sure that we get the reasonable starting regulatory asset base for regulatory purposes, and that was done this year. Still on the petroleum pipeline, the energy regulator also approved the guidelines for the for the allocation mechanism for gazetting. The regulation made in terms of the Petroleum Pipeline Act requires that an allocation mechanism for third parties access to to uncommitted capacity not to be developed. This is very, very important, Chair, because most of the storage facilities are co-owned, individually or co-owned by the seven majors. And the regulations enjoins the energy regulator to ensure that the oil companies come up with an allocation mechanism for access to uncommitted third party access. So this is what we're talking about. Yeah? The energy regulator also granted 17 licenses for the operation of existing facilities. And we also granted 3 construction licenses for the period from BP Engine Shell, total for new marine loading facility on 36 in Island View, Devon Harbour. From Engine Petroleum Limited for additional storage tanks at the existing Montague Garden storage facility in Cape Town, and also Engine Petroleum to construct new pipelines in Island View to connect its storage sites to new Transnet NMTP coastal terminal under construction. Very important, Chair, just to paint a picture, because of the new multi-product pipeline from Devon to Jameson Park, the configuration of the loading facilities from the bed to the tanks, to the storage tanks or accumulator tanks as they call them, has to be done, and this is the kind of computer declaration we're talking about. As a matter of interest, the pipeline from Devon to Jameson Park is the bullet pipeline, what you normally call it, referred to as a trunk pipeline, because it has no takeoff. Your DJP has the takeoff from Devon. It goes via Ladysmith, there's a takeoff, Bethlehem, there's a takeoff, Kroonstad, and then Secunda. But this one is just one transportation from Devon to Jameson Park, and then from there it gets distributed to Waterloo in the north and Langlacht in Johannesburg. Now, we also granted the operation of the Transnet pipeline to include the 3 new pipelines, Jameson Park to Al Road, Al Road to Langlacht, and Langlacht to Waterloo. The NMPP project consists mainly of 3 components, and that is the John M. and Devon to Jameson Park, and then Al Road to Langlacht, and Langlacht to Waterloo. The energy regulator also decided not to approve the following license application. Total SA, who applied for the operation of pipeline connecting Cape Town Harbour and the Farden Mainland Storage Facility. This was due to the fact that the pipeline is not operational after earlier decommissioning due to a lack of structural integrity. Also did not approve BP Southern Africa to operate 2 marine loading facilities located at Old Bay Harbour and BA Waterfront in the Western Cape. This was due to the fact that these are actually resellers retaining fuel to small boats and do not require licensing. Moving on to what we refer to as cross-cutting regulatory matters. These are matters that affect more than one industry. And the matters that I've just alluded to affect a particular industry, from electricity, petroleum pipelines, and pipelines. The energy regulator conducted a benchmarking study during the reporting period and approved this report. And actually, we have discovered that there are areas where we are comparing with the best regulators in the world. Of course, there are areas that we are improving, and this has been included in the business plan for areas of improvement. The energy regulator also approved the implementation plans and cost allocation manuals from a number of licenses as part of the implementation of regulatory reporting manuals. what the regulatory reporting manual is all about is about prescribing to licensees to the format in which they present financial and non-financial information to the energy regulator for the purposes of regulating, particularly pricing and tariffs. As you know, one of the used terms in this industry is what we call information asymmetry. In other words, the regulated will always be more knowledgeable than the regulator, have more information than the regulator on its activities. However, this RRM is intended to reduce that, not necessarily to eliminate it completely, but to reduce it. And these are systems that are used worldwide, particularly those economies that have got strong regulators like Canada, US, and UK. And we have identified seven metros as a pilot, and the major licensees, but in particular Eskom, Statoil, Transnet pipelines, and of course petroleum engine we must indicate that in terms of implementing this project, surprise surprise, Nelson Mandela Bay is actually leading in terms of its commitment and the seriousness with which they take this project from the municipality's point of view, because we are targeting the seven big metros in terms of moving towards a cost of service type of regulation. 14 members of the regulatory reporting manuals task team, as I also attended a study tour to Canada, where we have identified that they had about three regulators which have advanced intermediary and are starting to implement this type of system, and we had a study tour to study the mechanism. The initial regulator also approved implementation plans and cost allocation manuals of a number of licenses as part of the implementation of the regulatory reporting system. We are interacting with the licenses and assist them. First of all, we've got what we IPEM, the implementation plan evaluation mechanism, whereby the licenses are given the format how to submit their implementation plan, and it's evaluated against that plan. If there are weaknesses, we ask them to augment or assist them to move forward. From the governance and organizational matters, Chair, we had the honor and privilege to be visited by the minister to welcome the new part-time members, and of course to bid farewell to the outgoing members whom she appointed on the 1st of January this year. For us, Chair, it's not very often that we get visits. We're still looking forward to a visit by members of the portfolio committee. Of course, we did have a visit by a few in terms of gathering information, but not an official visit. And we've already extended the invitation to members to join one of our public hearings.
I think the guitar is playing, so we will better teach it.
No,
dear,
we stopped it. We have also received and qualified for this report.
Thank you, Chair. We'll say more about this later on when we deal about the financial performance. We are also the chair of the Regional Electricity Regulatory Authority Association. This is an association that has been established by the ministers responsible for energy in SADC, and we are currently chairing it for the next 2 years. We are also invited to attend the roundtable of the energy regulators in Rome during June, which was one of the preparatory meetings for the a G8 summit took place in Italy during July 2009. I think this is important to say that whereas economic regulation was not on the radar screen of these major economists, however, the failure of the regulators, particularly the bank regulators, leading to the financial crisis, has now put this matter on the radar screen. And we participated right from the beginning in Geneva to start this process, particularly looking at the financial banking itself, energy, and transportation and communications. That's where the United Nations was looking at the time, and now the G8 has taken the basin forward. In terms of the delays of the project, the delays and backlog were as a result of various reasons. The delay in the finalization of the renewable energy tariff power purchase agreement, as I said, we had to revise that after the regulations for new generation capacity were promulgated by the minister in August last year. And of course, the delays in the receipt of requested information from licenses, including provide comments and audit reports resulting in some projects being delayed. When we do technical audits, like any other audit process, obviously we have to give the audit team to comment on the findings that you've made, and in many instances we do suffer some delays in that regard. Although the licensing of all the existing petroleum facilities applied for the process to the final stage of the approval process, all the application for existing facilities could not be finalized. But we are getting there, Chair. One had hoped, and it has become clear for us that you cannot aggregate the licensing. You have to license facility by facility. That's why it's taking long. And also the delay in filling some positions within the organization has had an impact on the completion of some of the planned activities. Chair, moving on to the employment and vacancies. As I indicated, we've got a complement of 168, and the strength at the moment is 148 and a vacancy of 27. We are making huge progress in filling these positions. I think a noticeable observation that may be derived from this slide is that unfortunately, the biggest number of vacancies are in the core business of the organization. And talking about the employment equity issues, I will indicate that we are failing dismally in terms of attracting people with the disability, colored, Indian, and white, as reflected on that slide. Even our recruitment this year, it shows that most of the people that we recruit are African in race. We are trying very hard to share. In terms of gender, I think we surpassed the national average of 53. I think on average, gender is 56%. In terms of breakdown,
sorry, see, means you reached your 50-50.
Sorry,
if you say 56%, then it means that you reached out there, we actually exceeded your 50-50%.
Yes, we are amongst the we are part of the organization that contributes to the balance in terms of gender.
And the resolution of Okolokwane, and also the one who was really adopted by the NDC of Durban.
Thank you, Chair. And of course, in management positions, 43%. Chair, moving on to the financial performance, NAFTA, like many public entities and SOEs, we are governed by the PFMA, Treasury Regulations, South African Standards of General Generally Accepted Accounting Practice, issued by the Accounting Standards Board. For the year ended 31st March, the actual levies collected from the industries amounted to 127 million. Chair, let me just indicate that the acts that I did not mention, which are a purview of National Treasury, is the Gas Regulator Levies Act and the Petroleum Pipelines Levies Act, and of course the Section 5B of the Estuary Electricity Act, which was repealed, saved that particular section, which enables NAFTA to levy the pipe gas and the petroleum industry and the electricity industry with the permission of the minister, and of course after consultation in the public. 75 million was received from the electricity industry, 20 million was received from the pipe gas industry, 31 million was received from the petroleum pipelines industry. The shortfall between the budgeted 137 and actual levies collected is due to the actual volumes being below the projected volumes. Actually, so whenever we do budgeting, we try to, as accurately as possible, estimate or project the volumes. And once those volumes are determined, we cannot change. We have to levy the industry as the published figures. The actual expenditure for the year ended 31st March 2010 amounted to 245 million. This represents an underspending of 16% compared to the budgeted amount of 173 million. Now, Chair, to give effect to Section 13 of the National Energy Regulator Act, which simply says that the cost of regulating the industry must be allocated to the industry that you are regulating. So in terms of our ring-fencing methodology, we came up with a ring-fencing methodology which says all direct costs are allocated directly to the three regulated industries, and that all common costs are allocated to the following industries: 60% to the electricity industry, 16% pipe gas industry, and 24% petroleum industry. The following slide still compares the budget to the actual financial performance at year end. The actual revenue collected from the industries was 3.3 million below the budget, mainly due to the actual volumes being below the budgeted amount. The actual expenditure incurred was below the budgeted amount. The main reason for the under expenditure was, first of all, remuneration due to the vacancy rate. At year end, as I indicated, was 16%. Secondly, the consultant fees due to some unforeseen circumstances. Some projects were deferred to the next financial year. And of course, study fees due to our employees using the funds for furthering their studies, having indicated that they would do so. This slide, Chairperson, shows the allocation of actual expenditure incurred between different categories. I think it's important to know, as a knowledge institution, most of our costs go to employment costs, which constitute 0.5%. Chair, for the year under review, NASA has received an unqualified audit opinion from the Auditor General for that financial year. However, the way matters of emphasis that were raised by the Auditor General, the one group of emphasis are matters that
Yes, if we proceed. You can proceed now, yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I'm told that in these kind of buildings, health and safety announcements supersede any other procedure in case there's an emergency for evacuation. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I was indicating that there are matters of emphasis. For this financially, there's an irregular expenditure of 7.3 million due to contracts that did not comply with supply chain management practices, Note 8 of 2007 and 8 of National Treasury. But there are other irregular expenditures that are reported as a matter of emphasis that belong to prior years. One had to do with the irregularity relating to suspected fraudulent activity, and the other one relates to the classification issue, where there was a difference between ourselves and the Auditor General around our machines, whether they are under operating lease or they are under finance lease. And of course, there's another issue that is reported by the Auditor General that relates to the significant contingent liability, which is referred to as significant uncertainty, which relates to essentially of a bid that was awarded and subsequently cancelled after realizing that it was unfairly awarded. And of course, the agency that lost that bid filed a suit to NASA as a respondent of about 800,000 to the South Gauteng High Court. And of course, the implementation of audit findings are being addressed through the Operational Risk Committee, which then reports to the Audit and Risk Subcommittee from time to time, and of course, the energy regulator. In conclusion, Chair, we are growing. We, as an organization, under the leadership of the board, we continue to grow from strength to strength since inception. It's interesting to note that since inception, Chair, for the 5 years continuously, by the way, NASA celebrated its 5 year on the 30th of September. We have been receiving clean and unqualified audits. The regulation of the energy sector often poses challenges for the energy regulator, because we have to balance the interests of licensees, investors, consumers, and users, and of course the policymakers in terms of government representatives by the DOE. And to deal with these regulatory challenges, NASA has undertaken various initiatives to refine regulatory practices and methodologies in its quest to become a world leader in energy regulation. We also, Chair, NASA has also received its regulatory approval. Has achieved its objectives through projects set out in the plan, and we've completed 60% of those. I think also, Chair, it's important to note that the Auditor General in this financial year under review not only audited the regularity approach, but also the performance information. There were no findings. Our IT systems, there were findings, however, there were no reportable ones. And also, we are continuing as operating as a going concern. And we must say, notwithstanding the vacancies that are reflected, the in terms of our human resources, we have stabilized. We're not sure whether it's because of the economic situation or not, but certainly the staff turnover is not as high as it used to be when we started as an organization. I thank you, Chair, for your attention.
Thank you very much to you all. Members, we are now exactly at quarter to one. We're supposed to have lunch at one, I think we will have lunch at 1:15 so that we can at least give the members time to engage on the report of NERSA. Not wasting time, I give over to the members to raise the questions and so forth. But also, not least, Brother Ross, I saw you just arrived before lunch. But you're welcome.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Apologies for being late. I couldn't get a flight from the feast. I think everybody's coming down for the rugby in units over the weekend from feast. We don't offer fly, but we fly down for rugby. Apologies, please, Chair.
Okay. Honourable Tim Jong, Frida, Honourable Mitchell, and Honourable Lucas.
Oh, thanks, Chair. Thank you, NERSA, for not following on the footsteps of your mother body for the unqualified report. You know, my question is only on the deficit. Do you have a plan maybe to deal with the deficit of 7.5 million?
Thank you, Chair. I would like to have a clarity on page 14, highlights cross-cutting regulatory. The benchmarking national energy regulator of South Africa against international practice state 2 and 3 reports were approved on the 23rd September and 28th November 2010. I don't know whether there are. I thought we were in October, but here, November 28th already. Has been approved.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, indeed. I think it's worthy of comment when the entities get unqualified to pass. I take it, obviously, the non-reportables don't just get ignored. In other words, if there are remarks from the auditor, which indeed you don't have to report, but they highlight that you do something about it, and I just want to make that point here. But I think for me, the most important thing about NERSA is really the point that is made on page 6 under strategic objectives. Bullet point number 5. I've made this point before, I'll make it again because it's critical, it's absolutely critical, and I agree with that point about the credibility of NERSA. If you look at it and you look at the highlights for the electricity industry regulation, and it's actually, I find it quite ironic that we count that as a highlight. Because for many people it would probably be a low light, or the second bullet point from the bottom. On the 24th of February 2010, the energy regulator approved ESCOM's multi da 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 25%, 24%, 24%. Now, I'm sure for most people in this country that's a low light, because if you look at that point that is made under the strategic objectives, there is always a feeling that decisions taken by NERSA tend to favor ESCOM. And it's very, very important that we take this on board as we look ahead. There are already accusations now that these heavy tariff increases that have been agreed for the next 3 years were a prepayment for what is going to be happening with the coming nuclear burden. Now, I think the important thing to take on board here, obviously people will say things like that, but I think what is important is that NERSA has got to be careful always to make sure that they maintain that balance, that it does not appear to the average consumer of electricity in this country that they have been penalized just to maintain the status quo for ESCOM. Because if that becomes the reality for many of the people, all the efforts that we are making to protect the poor will fail. Because as we levy increases like 25% over 3 years and that kind of thing, we can rationalize it as much as we like. The fact of the matter is, for the poor people, that is a lot of money, and they will, that's the only thing they remember. The fact that the lights didn't go off, they don't remember. So it's very, very important to take that in mind. Thank you, Chair. I think that's my report.
Thank you, Chief. These are concerns really around pricing and the tariffs, because, you know, I think on page 25 you make a good statement. The energy regulator is required to balance the interest of the investor, consumer, end user. I think that's a good guideline. That is what we should do. But in reality, one of the places that we find is municipalities. Municipalities, they charge us, but they charge us well, and they're making a revenue out of the tariff, because they get it at a special price. And then they don't care about money. They do minimum maintenance. The slightest storm, your lights are off. So, I mean, the service is not you can't relate the service you're getting to the price you pay. You pay much more in rural areas than you pay in urban areas. And that we should look at, and look at it very seriously. And even businesses and industrial, you get a high, you get a low. And you, as the domestic care, we got all different prices. So it is worrying. That's why you'll get such migration, people moving to try to get cheaper electricity where they can. The unfair issue of this year, we are a developing country, and we are comparing with first world countries, the basket, the European price. I really don't appreciate it, I must say, because these people are miles ahead of us. We are still coming up, and yes, that therefore we can even be, there's been quotes that we have the cheapest electricity. And I don't really buy this. And I think we need to look at this really carefully. The vacancies, I hope we're going to fill these vacancies, or there's a continue without the vacancies. So we must know this, yeah, because there's no use having vacancies and they're not being filled. And according to this, you're operating. You're operating, it doesn't look as though you need more people. But I also know that you need to employ and fill these vacancies so you can have staff who can train and who can be for long term, because we need them here. But I say, basically, it is the tariff issue which I really, it's a pain in the neck.
C'est pour ça que
my apologies, I'm back again. The speaker, as you know, is our father, mother, father of Parliament. Just to ask from NAFTA, the critical question I have is on the performance, the financial performance. That is slide 21. I mean, this is really not acceptable. Of a 15.3% compared to the budget and all this. I mean, what are the critical issues that then led to this? And what are you doing then to deal with this particular problem? Because you might spend the rent and spend, but if the performance is not accurate, then you know it's a big problem. But also linked to it to the question of your business plan here, that is where the computer 66% of the activity for 2009 and 10 as planned. 90% activities were not completed as planned due to reasons within NERSA's control. What are those issues? It would have been better if you say that are beyond your control, but what are the critical issues that then led you not to implement your own business plan? And what are the main activities that were problematic then, not to finalize? The consultancy fees, the percentage is high to me. NERSA, I believe you should have the skills within to deal with this job. Why then do you use the consultant? Because at the same time you don't fill in vacancies, but you don't. Is it a better way to opt for consultancy work, or on what area do you use the consultancy work? But after that, what do you do then to make sure that they can impact skills and not need to continuously test? Because I think at 1 year, I'm not sure which year, it was the Auditor General put a recommendation of at least not beyond 10% of consultancy to be used, and that was accepted by government. But yourself with more than 10%, why? And why don't you then deal with the people that you employ? Because I think you employ qualified people with what? Masters, doctorates and all that, MBAs. So why can't they do the job and then you refer the job to consultants?
I also want to add on that. On page 16, you're talking about the delays and backlogs of licensing, and then you give the reason why that actually happened. But I want to know is that the only reason that this process cannot be speed up? Is it only the reason about the vacancies? So is there not other way that we can that you can actually resolve this problem?
Just the last one is you're on the slide 21, ring fencing. These are nice good things that you normally use either by CFOs and yourself. Ring fencing methodology. What informs that? And why then do we have 24% on the petroleum pipeline industry? Why do we have 24% still using 50% to electricity, only 16% then to pipe gas? If I may have a sense of what led to this to these percentages as they are.
I think it will be the last one, so they take it. Oh, Ross also wants to have a bite, okay. Slow?
Page 18, or slide number 18. Despite the fact that you have accepted NERSA, this is worse. It's too paternalistic to work. See, on your top management, on the mail, you have two African males, three African women. That's your top level. Senior management, nine African males, one colored, one Indian, zero white. Five females, African females, zero color, zero Indians, two whites. You need to do something about this. We did not fight for blacks. We fought for a united South Africa, where all of us can be side by side. This does not say well about the color and the picture of your institution, as well as the sex of it.
Okay.
Honorable boss.
Thank you, honorable boss. My colleagues did highlight the concern of the high tariffs, and I fully agree with them. But we have the inclining block tariffs proposed by NERSA, and I think that was to curb the effect on the poorest of the poor. Unfortunately, I think local government was not geared for the implementation of those tariffs in terms of the structures and systems that they have, and I think the inclining block tariffs did not have the effect intended by NERSA. Now, I'd just like to know what consultation has been done with local government. Was there a task team set up to inform local government as to the systems that they need to make sure that the poor are protected in terms of the application of these inclining block tariffs? And then just the second remark that was made regarding the maintenance, and I believe we have the people from EDI present, and also the restructuring of the electricity industry. I know I'm late on board, I could not make it before the time, but if I can just have a very brief description as to exactly where we are in terms of the progress, in terms of maintenance, and what EDI proposes in the restructuring of the maintenance process. Thank you.
It's a 40-year-old year later, and we can't take us back. We can't move because of the time constraints. I think on that phone you raised, I think if you want a written reply, I think you can request it for them.
Okay.
I don't want that we start a debate. If we start a debate, we're going to sit here the whole day. But I little bit disagree with you. Lastly, before the CEO respond on the questions and so forth, I want to raise the concern about Durban. When we were there a few weeks back, and I'm driving around Saturday, and I looked the way the storage facility is, it's between the people. It is not a risk for those residents who are staying there. Yet I the storage of that particular area. I just want to raise that concern. Over to you. To say something. Over to you. Be able to respond. There is a follow-up on the question.
No, we just want to get the clarity as you were right, that you, your job as NERSA, you just issue the license irregardless of where the operation is. Are there no measures that make sure that you check whether is it according to health and state, whatever, all other issues? They're like the EIA, like, of some sort. Your job is just to issue and not check it, because that was the gist of the question, to say where the operations take place is not an area that is conducive for people to live next to it. What, you just issue the license, it's fine with you.
Chair, we let me just give you an example. In relation specifically to the environmental impact assessment, in issuing a license, the regulator has got to ensure that the applicant complies with all legislation, including environmental impact assessment, to an extent that is either you submit as part of your application the record of decision from Department of Water Affairs and Environment, or you have applied for such a record of decision and you are in the process of doing the environmental impact assessment. We do take into consideration all other applicable legislation and standards in terms of constructions of pipelines. So we do not just willy-nilly, without considering other applicable legislation, issue a license.
Chairperson, the Transnet pipeline that's currently in construction, there was a lot of complaints by residents that Transnet was digging in their environment. So we followed that up with them. We actually did an in-local inspection, and we followed up that with them. And Transnet explained to us that they had a number of challenges. The one challenge was a lot of the land belongs to the trust, the King's Trust. And there were no maps that were kept accurately up to date. So they would then go reading the maps, understanding that there's no one here. So they would then plan according to that. When they get to the digging, there is a whole community there. So then they would have to negotiate with the community. And they were saying that's part of the delay, where they now have had to start negotiations with the community and stop the digging until they have had agreement. So it's been an area where we said to them, well, surely that was not good enough. And they would tell us that when they did their initial inspection, the circumstances have changed between there and now.
Thank you, Chair. Moving on, Chair, Honorable Mutau, in terms of indeed, we would like to think we want to maintain our credibility. As I indicated, the function of the energy regulator is an unenviable one, in the sense that you want to balance the interest of the producers, the end users, or the customers, the investors, and the policymakers. And then the processes that we follow a due process. Take into consideration the evidence, effects, and all that has been presented to us. And in this particular case, we, because of an unprecedented interest in this particular determination, we even went to an extra mile of holding public hearings in the 9 provinces. And to an extent that this matter became a Section 77 in terms of the Labor Relations Act, it landed at NEDLAC, whereby as part of an appendage to the Department of Energy, we had to explain on a number of occasions, and which led to some form of resolution. But we had to explain in detail, because I can assure you, Chair, that we do our calculation, cold calculations, but we also look at the viability and the sustainability of the entity, and we also look at what the determination does to the economy. The cost of unserved energy is very huge compared to the 41 cents on average per kilowatt hour that we pay. The cost of unserved energy, people dealing with energy will tell you, in the interest of this country, the determination we believe that NERSA made over the 3 years is in the interest, in the long-term interest of the country and the viability of the utility. It is a difficult job to do. Coming to the issue of protecting the poor, yes, there is a policy that joins NERSA to ensure that we you know, the price increases are cushioned for the poor. And in that regard, we came up with the inclining block tariffs for the four categories of residential consumers. Yes, to an extent that certain municipalities have got conventional meters, they are implementing. And with regard to prepaid, there's a weighted average methodology that you are applying. And for those that are not implementing as yet, we do have a task team consisting of ESCOM ourselves and the some municipalities through SALT. So there is that process of ensuring that at the end of the day, we do implement the inclining block tariff in its totality. Honorable Lucas, yes, the municipalities do not charge electricity prices that are not approved by NERSA, and if they do, then we do penalize them in terms of clawback in the following year. But by and large, the methodology that we're using in municipalities is what we refer to benchmarking. We're not using a cost of service type of or return rate of return methodology. That's why we started with the 7 metros, that we first started determining the certain regulatory asset base with a view to move towards to rate of return methodology so that we can really determine the cost of really producing that particular electricity. The issue of using the European countries in terms of determining the maximum price of ESCOM, I think that is the reality that is contained in the agreement, which really made the necessary to invest. Otherwise, it would have been maybe difficult to invest. I was fortunate to be part of DOE at the time to negotiate that agreement between Sasol, Mozambique, and the government of the Republic of South Africa. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't have invested in that massive infrastructure from the Kimani gas unit to Sekunda. I'm not speaking on their behalf, but I'm just saying the method of determining the price, we did not have any gas infrastructure in this country. Transmission, yes, we do have distribution and reciclation, but of that magnitude. Yes, we will definitely. There are plans in place to ensure that we address the issue of vacancies. The issue of 16.13%. Yes, Chairperson, I think we agree. It's not acceptable. But there are a number of factors. The one that we are addressing, I think to start with, our planning has tended to be optimistic, I want to confess. But also, during the year, the reprioritization in terms of reviewing the plan, as a result, the expenditure profile changes. But we hope now, with what we are implementing in terms of the integrated demand plan, soon after finalizing the project, the budget and the business plan, then we make sure that people start spending on the 1st of April the following year. That also applies with consultants. I must indicate that if you look at our budget and expenditure budget, in the areas where economic regulation has matured, in the electricity industry, you will see that the consultancy budget is relatively low. So, for instance, the MYPD one, we relied heavily on the international consultant. MYPD, we did not have a single consultant. However, we don't have, for instance, coal experts within NERSA. So, to example, and to look at those coal contracts, of course, that's for sure, you would have to have a coal expert as an example. But by and large, we produce reliance on consultants in the electricity area. But in the new areas, like pipelines and petroleum pipelines, there is a usage of some consultants with a very strong emphasis of skills transfer, which is embedded in the contract itself and is monitored to ensure that by the time the consultancy they've addressed the skills transfer issue. Chair, yes, the with regard to the ring fencing methodology, what informs 60, 24, 16. This methodology obviously comes as a result of what effort we as an organization put in regulating pipelines, petroleum pipelines, and electricity. Now, the first thing that we look at the volume of work that comes through the. Remember, people in the electricity division are charged directly. It's only to those people who are in the support services. How do you allocate their time and their cost to these industries? So for that, we are using the time spent and also the complements. That comes out to around that speed. And we do that every 3 years. We've just done now, and we came up with a different approach. And we simply use the complement. Honourable member, around being paternalistic, yes, we it's not a good picture in terms of our race profile, and it concerns us, and we're working very hard to ensure that the race profile of NERSA is improved to ensure that it's not completely black the way it is. But we do, on a national level, we are required to publicize in all the newspapers. Sunday Times, during the week, it can either be business day or
I don't apply.
Yes, I mean, we've got very, very few. Even internal promotions. We don't have promotions. Even people internal apply. So we do put it in Star on Wednesday. It's a national paper. It doesn't matter where you are. You do get that. It's an independent newspaper. And we do advertising on Soweto. So I don't know how much more does one do to achieve that, but we are working hard, Chair. The inclining block tariff issue I've already addressed. Now, finally, Chair. The issue. Do you want to assist in that one? Yeah, the deficit.
Thanks, honourable members. In terms of the deficit, in terms of how do we plan to dealing with it? Yes, as per the financials, this is reflected as a deficit because what we receive less than what we actually spend. But then, in terms of the previous financial year, we had a surplus, and we applied to the minister to retain those surplus, and we used those surplus to basically take care of the deficit. It is a deficit, but we do have sufficient funds in terms of that to address the deficit as per the financial statement. It's monies that were previously surplus, we're just using them in the current financial year. Thank you.
And just to conclude that part, Chair, we are working hard that we reach an ideal situation that at the end of the year we've got zero surplus. so that we spend all the money. This, some of these things are due to understanding. And I note the question that was posed to the mother body, how do they feel not to have spent money? We also feel not very good to return the money to the industry because there's a service that we're depriving somebody out there. So we will ensure that we come out zero surplus every year.
Other questions?
No more questions.
CEO, I don't know that you when it comes near by the end of the year, you just spend it because you want to spend it and quickly finish it because you don't want all over. I think you must regularly assess every third month. Yeah. I think we are more than over our last time, but I want to thank NEFA to bring the report to us, and I think there's still critical issues that we want to engage in, but the time constraint that we must in close the session because we must go for lunch, but the other thing is can stop not to register the loose concerns because there is in the report for me very critical issues on the issue of people doing applications and why they not we don't get that explanation why they not actually or be reject or whatever. So if you can remember, we have that public hearing last month where some of those people were invited to the public hearings raised a very critical concerns also about NERSA. So so I hope and I trust my chairperson is back. I raised the point you raised when you start, when you're saying you are receiving a visit by the minister, but you wonder when will we come as the portfolio committee? We will come, but we'll come unannounced. So, on this note, I want to thank you very much, everybody, and you'll be welcome to join us for lunch. It's now 1:25. At 2, yeah. It's finger lunch, so it's not a sitting lunch. Okay, thank you very much.
No problem.